Good evening, everyone. We're having a special class tonight about what happened last week at Yeshivat Merkaz Harav. Those of you who are unaware, last week, Thursday night, an Arab gentleman walked into the Merkaz Harav library and proceeded to wound many people and kill 8 students, and we're going to discuss with more detail what happened that night. I think there's a lot we could learn from that night. At the same time, there are going to be certain things that are said that are not fit for children, so I don't think this class should be heard by children. Unfortunately, we've had quite a few terrorist attacks in this country, and this one, for most people around here, hit home much more than other times. On one level, Eov, Job taught us, "All bad, all the cholasha laish yiten bad nafsho." The human tendency is that we will use one piece of flesh to protect another piece of flesh. If a person sees he's going to get hit, he picks up his hand. Well, the hand's going to get hit. The idea is, yeah, the hand's going to get hit, but I'd rather the hand get hit than I get hit. All, one piece of flesh, bad all, protects another piece of flesh. The chol asher le'ish, and everything we have, the normal tendency is yiten bad nafsho, a person is willing to give to save his life. So this hit closer to home, because it was closer to home, I mean, down the block. But there's more to it than that. Rav Kook writes that if this country is to succeed, if the Jewish people are going to succeed in establishing their presence in the land of Israel, so Rav Kook says there's only one way it's going to happen. And the only way it can happen, and this isn't Rav Kook's chidush, but for some reason people seem to disassociate this concept with Rav Kook, so therefore I'm quoting it in his name. Rav Kook writes, the only way that can happen is if things will be run in accordance with the Torah in this country. Rav Kook says the country has the choice of two courses, either to adopt a Torah lifestyle and succeed, or neglect to adopt a Torah lifestyle and deteriorate. He says that the country without Torah will self-destruct. He says, the question is, will we be able to get the country to run according to the Torah? Now, what was attacked Thursday night was not just a group of children, it was a group of people learning Torah. They attacked the Torah. It's not the first time in our history. We learned in Malachim that the Ammonites, the Moabites also wanted to burn the Torah. We learned quite a few times that the Torah was attacked. But Thursday night, again, what was under attack was the nation of Israel and those that learned the Torah of Israel. And when word got out that this is what happened, so at 8:50, when news started going out, Rav Chaim Kanievsky sent word to all the yeshivas in Bnei Brak to close their gemaras and take out the hillmen and start davening for the people that were wounded. Friday afternoon, as the Levaya procession for one of the children was headed to the Mount of Olives to Har HaZeisim, Rav Eliashiv joined that Levaya on its way to Har HaZeisim. We're all learning the same Torah. Sometimes we get a little bit confused. We stress that this one's wearing this kippah and that one's wearing that kippah and this one has these ideological beliefs and that one has those ideological beliefs. We have to remember that we're all learning Torah. Within the Torah there are different colors, and within the Torah there are different hashkafot, but at the end of the day we're one people and we're striving for the same thing. And when Thursday night's attack happened, so everyone felt this wasn't like anything else. This wasn't a bus bombing. This was with intent to attack a Torah center, and we're going to have to analyze at the end of the night, were they successful or not? Now, Chazal tell us that every person is like a whole world. one of the reasons God created the world so that the world began with one man is that we value each and every man. So that we recognize, hey, the whole world started with one person. So every person equals the whole world because every person has that potential. Every person that's killed, so we stop and we say, wait a second, that's a whole world that was destroyed. And at no point should I be misunderstood. I'm not coming to belittle the tragedy that happened Thursday night. 8 worlds were destroyed Thursday nights. And much more than 8 worlds, as we will discuss. One of the things that happens when such a tragedy occurs in our midst, and when such young innocent people are murdered so brutally, is that a person starts feeling, where's the justice? And we're going to discuss that philosophically later tonight, but I want to begin with discussing the facts of what happened that night, because one of the reasons that we feel this question so poignantly is because we feel like evil won, and it seems at first glance that the question of who lived and who died that night was a question of who he shot the bullet at. Seems like God was not in the picture that night. And that is what is most disturbing, because we look at that picture and we say, wait a second, those children were learning in a library. Those were children learning in a library. What can you tell me they did wrong? So before we deal with the philosophical aspects of that, I want us to first see a broader picture of what happened that night, because when we see a broader picture, very often we suddenly realize that the question dissipates. So that's the reason why I'm going to try and share with you a little bit of what happened that night. And I don't want to mention what could have happened. I leave that for the inference ability of every person sitting here. I want to ask before we begin, again, if there are children listening to this on the web, so please close it. This isn't for children. If there are parents listening and they're not careful that their children are around, so please shoo your children away or listen to it with headphones. And to the people that are here, I want to ask, unless you don't understand something, please hold the questions till the end. We'll take questions in the end, but I think it's better to run through it and then go back. And again, the reason we're doing this is because I think once we have the broader picture, it's already a little bit easier to digest what happened Thursday night. So we know that at 8:30 p.m., an Arab person walked into the courtyard of Merkaz Arav. But I want us to begin at 7 p.m. that night. 7 p.m. that night, there was a person who was headed to Merkaz Arav. Every night for 11 years, he's been learning at Merkaz Arav with a chavrusa. And that night, he was in the middle of working on a certain Gemara, and he saw it's Thursday night. If he closes his Gemara, next time he's going to see his Gemara is Sunday. So he had a few books open in front of him. He was in the middle of delving into the Gemara. So he calls his chavrusa and says, tonight I can't come because if I come to learn to you, I'm in the middle of so many things, I can't come tonight. So at 7 o'clock, he continues learning in his base medrash, and his chavrusa continues learning in his base medrash. Before we continue, let's just get a picture of what Merkaz Arav looks like. You have about 400 students between the base medrash and the dormitory. And then you have another about 300-400 students in the yashlats, in the high school that's attached. It's the building that's literally attached. They're really one long building. So this man walked into Merkaz Arav at 8:30 with 600 bullets, and there were 700 people at Merkaz Arav, between Merkaz Arav and Yashlatz at the time. At 8:25, there's a young Talmud Chacham in Merkaz Arav named Arya Mirzer. For 6-7 years, he's learning in the library every night. And at 8:25, his wife calls him and tells him the baby's wailing. And he tells her, I'm in the middle of learning something. Can I come in 5 minutes? And she says, no, I can't calm the baby down. He's been going crazy for a while. I need you now. So he closes his Gemara and starts walking home. At 8:29, there's a young Talmud Chacham who's been learning at Merkaz Harav for 15 years now, every night. And he calls his wife, and she starts telling him how difficult the kids are that night. So he hangs up the phone with her and says, okay, I guess she meant I should come home. And starts walking towards his home. At 8:30, the terrorist walks up to the gates of Merkaz Harav with a box, a TV box, his Kalichnikov, and 600 bullets, different cartridges to stick into the gun. And at 8:30, there's a bus of 30 students from Yashlatz who are just coming back from their trip, and they tell their driver, do us a favor, drop us off in front of Merkaz Harav. Now, no one knows what's about to happen, but this man is standing there with his gun. Yinon Weissman is 15 footsteps away, up the block. Arya Merzer has rounded the corner and he's on his way to his home. The terrorist is standing at the gates of the yeshiva, and the bus is standing, is as it's passing the yeshiva, the students have asked the driver, drop us off in front of the yeshiva. 30 students, a bus filled with students, have just asked the driver, drop us off there. And the driver chooses to ignore them and drives up to the light to drop them off. And the bus starts complaining to the driver, we just asked you to drop us off there. He says, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't focused. They're at the light, they start getting off the bus, and they hear the first shots. 30 students' lives have just been saved because the driver, for some reason, didn't listen to them. Yinon Weissman is standing at the corner, and he hears the shots, and he's not there because his wife called him. Arya Merzer is already up the block, he's rounded the corner, and he hears the shots because his wife called him. Now, when the man walked into when he started walking up the steps, so one of the guys from Merkaz Rav was on his way down, and he sees an Arab walking in with a box that says TV on it. So he says to him, you mean to tell me the guys in the high school ordered a TV here? Who would order a TV? And turned around and started heading back up towards the library. He meets up with a young man named Hirschfeld. And as he talks to him, one bullet whizzes past his neck, and he has a scratch on his neck. And a second bullet whizzes past his other neck, the other side of his neck. And a third bullet whizzes past his forehead. He has 3 scratches. His friend Hirschfeld's been shot, and they both run into the stairwell. They're running down the stairwell, and the terrorist is making his way towards the steps, towards the library. To his right is the Beis Medrash with about 100 students. In front of him is the library, and inside the library there are about 40 people, 15 of which are sitting in a room waiting for a class that's supposed to start at 8:30. The rabbi is running 2 minutes late. So he's on his way to the shiur, and the shooting starts. One student from Merkaz Harav is on his way out the dorm, and the terrorist sees him, and he shoots towards him and misses. And the student realizes what's happening, and he starts running up the stairs yelling, there's a terrorist here, there's a terrorist here. The dorm gets cleared. Everyone's run out of the dorm, and there's no one that can be harmed there. The two students who were talking, Hirschfeld and his friend, says friend got grazed on the neck and on the forehead, and they both run into the stairwell of the yeshiva. Hirschfeld collapses and passed away over there. Another guy made it out. And the guys in the yeshiva have already gotten warning that there's a terrorist on campus. The whole Beis Medrash cleared out of a back door. Now, 600 bullets, a Beis Medrash filled with people, 70, 80 people were in the Beis Medrash at that time. They've all just cleared out. And he makes his way to the library. He shoots one student, and the bullet pierces through both his lungs. The student runs into the yeshiva and is met by a big Talmud Chacham, Rav Kahana's son, Rav Baruch Kahana. And Rav Baruch Kahana sees the person is having trouble breathing, so he sticks both his fingers into the holes of the bullet and fills the lungs. And now that student is going to be breathing because Rav Baruch Hanna is holding his lungs intact. And that student is still alive. Rav Baruch Hanna saved his life. They made it to the paramedics. When he walked into the library, so the way the library is built is you have a bunch of tables, but he had started shooting from the stairs already, so the children, the high school students, went and hid behind rows of books. There was one guy there, a Ger Tzedek, and he thought it was firecrackers. He thought it was Purim. He kept his head in the Gemara. He never picked his head up from the Gemara. He was, when the terrorist walked into the library, he headed straight for him, crossed half the library. When he crossed half the library to shoot that one student, 10 or 15 people ran out of the library. So we have a lot of people whose lives just been saved. You have 15 people in the room waiting for a class to begin. And then he started walking between the bookcases and shooting the high school students. Those are the 15 and 16 year olds. And he didn't just shoot them once. He ensured everyone was dead. He spent 600 bullets in that library. It's true. He killed 8 people. 2 before he entered the library and another 6 in the library. There were 40 people in the library. After he finished off the students who were hiding between the books, so there are the rooms where the classes are being given. 3 of those rooms are always locked, 2 are always open. In one of them, you have 15 students hiding. And he started walking towards those rooms. They see his footsteps, and he tries one door, it's locked. He tries another door, it's locked. He tries a third door, it's locked. Now he's coming up to their door. And they all stood there holding the table against the door, and he thought that was a locked door. And that's how all 15 students made it out alive. They were holding that table against the door when he tried to enter that room. He walks out of the library. There's a young Talmud Chacham who's already composed, I think, 5 or 6 Sfarim. And you'll notice in the media they stress that he's in the army, that he's a katzin. It's true. 1 month a year he serves in the army. 11 months a year he's learning Torah and writing books. And that's Rav Yitzchak Dadon who shot him dead, who shot him when he walked out of the library. We have to stop and think and recognize that 30 students almost walked out of a bus in front of this terrorist. And for some reason, Hashem had these 30 students, the driver dropped them off down the block. Aryeh Melzer was always there at night. This other guy who at 7 o'clock calls his chavrus and says I'm in the middle of learning. Yinon Weissman, who a minute before the terrorist walked in, these are all people who heard the bullets but weren't there to see them. The 15 students inside the classroom were all people who heard the bullets, heard the yelling, but made it out alive. The story is a bitter story. At the same time, we have to recognize that there is something guiding here. Hashem is guiding what's happening. And when we look at the story, the first glance, when all we see is 8 innocent children being murdered, is, wait a second. When we start recognizing that there were hundreds that were in danger that night, and that there were literally single people, tens of people who their lives were saved miraculously. When you look at the details, say that's exceptional. The picture starts taking on a different shade. Again, I'm not coming to belittle the tragedy. What I do want us to recognize is that within every tragedy there's also hashgacha. One of the questions that someone posed to me on Shabbos was, we say the Torah protects. So we have to know that God created the world in a way that we can act. That's our b'chira chofshi. And our sages tell us that David HaMelech, when he was holding, he was talking to God, and he asked God, when am I going to die? So God said, I never reveal when a person's going to die. So he asked, what day of the week am I going to die? So God said, it's going to be a Shabbos. So we're skipping the rest of the conversation. Every Shabbos, David HaMelech would spend all Shabbos learning. Why? Because the Torah is supposed to protect us. came the Shabbos that he's supposed to die, and the Malchum Avos wants to kill him, and he can't. He's learning Torah. So the Malchum Avos makes a ruckus outside in the back of the house, and David is saying, focused on his Torah, and he wants to see what's happening in the back of the house. And as he steps, the Malchum Avos makes one step missing, and he trips on that step, and for one split second, he's off of his learning, and that second he dies. So that teaches us, first of all, we have to be on the level that our learning is like David HaMelech, in order for the learning to protect us. The learning of Am Yisrael in general protects Am Yisrael in general. But for an individual to think that his learning is going to protect him, firstly, his learning has to be on the level of a great, great sage. Our learning, it doesn't come close. But even if you would say that our learning was on a level that it should protect us from death, then we see that even by David HaMelech, the second he flinched, the second there was a second he wasn't learning, so it didn't protect him, even on his level. So that's not really a question. We don't expect that a person's going to stand in the way of a gun and start reading psukim and he won't die. That's not what the Gemara means, that the Torah protects us. The general learning, when we learn, then Am Yisrael has more protection. It's the greatest merit for Am Yisrael. But no one could say, I'll stand in the middle of the highway and I'll read Torah and I won't die because Torah protects. It doesn't work that way. And if someone's shooting a gun at someone, then chances are there is that split second when you hear a boom and a person stops saying Torah, and that's all it takes. That's what Chazal teaches. Even David HaMelech, who was focusing on not making a break in his learning. Another question someone asked me on Shabbos is, we have a rule that Shluchei Mitzvah Einan Nizokin. People who are on their way to do mitzvah, they don't get damaged. So the truth is, two things. Before we ask the question about what we see here, let's ask a more difficult question. Our sages tell us that one of the greatest sages in our history was Rabbi Akiva. The Roman Empire chose to execute Rabbi Akiva in a very unusual and painful death. They peeled the flesh off of him while he was alive. So he's standing there having the flesh peeled off of him. You'd think he's saying, ow. No, Chazal tell us what's he saying. He's talking to his students and he's saying, Shema Yisrael. And the students say to him, till this point, you're still saying Shema? Now, when you're being tortured and you're about to be put to death? And he gives them a lesson. He says, let me tell you something. In Shema we say we should love Hashem with all our heart. With all our heart means in good, in bad. Regardless what happens, we have to be willing to give our life for the love of Hashem. And I never knew if I could live up to that. And now I'm being given the opportunity to live up to that. I won't live up to that. So now I'm saying Shema Yisrael, this is my lifelong dream. And now I'm going to make it. So Rabbi Akiva was learning Torah, teaching Torah, performing mitzvos, and passed away and left us a lesson for eternity. We don't come close to Rabbi Akiva. So the question is, well, how do we swallow that? So before we ask that question, let's ask ourselves who asked that question first. Moshe Rabbeinu did. Chazal say Moshe Rabbeinu saw Rabbi Akiva, saw his greatness in Torah, saw his death, and turned to the God and had a question. And God didn't answer that question. God told him, that's the decree. There are heavenly decrees that we don't understand. But the fact that we don't understand them doesn't mean that we can't understand certain aspects of them. Chazal tell us that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi spoke in a way that was unkind to an animal, and as a punishment, he had many years that he had a toothache. So you think, okay, he did something wrong, he deserved the punishment, that's what happened. Chazal say all the years that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi had his toothache, no woman miscarried. Shimshon, our sages tell Samson, there was a reason why the Philistines gorged out his eyes. He looked improperly. He looked at women in a way that was wrong on his level. Shimshon was one of the greatest sages we ever had. On his level, he did something wrong with his eyes, and that's why his eyes were gorged out. So you think, okay, if he deserved it, so he deserved it. End of story. No, the Navi tells us not that way. He's standing in a Colosseum. There are tens of thousands of Philistines coming to watch his torture. And he turns to God and he says, give me the merits of one eye. One eye that was gorged out by the Philistines. Give me the merits of that one eye. And in the merit of that eye, He brings down the house. He pulls down the pillars that are holding down the house. And this whole Colosseum collapses. And throughout his whole life, he had a pretty exceptional military career. And yet, when he pulled down the pillars that held down up the house, he killed more Philistines than his whole life. One eye. Not his life. One eye. For one eye, he was able to kill more Philistines than throughout his military career. And he was an exceptional general. So we see that even if a person deserves something, in heaven, there's a certain weight to every ounce of pain. Everything gets measured. And when we're talking on a national level, then everything gets measured with regard to the nation. We don't understand why God does things. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand. He asked the question, and God said, "Oh, you won't understand." It's interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu phrased this question a certain way. He said, "Hodieni na darachecha, please let me know your ways, ve'edacha, and I will know you." In Tanakh, the word "know" connotes intimacy, connotes a tremendous connection. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, "God, I want to come closer to you. So long as I have this question, I feel like there's a level of closeness I can't attain. Closeness means understanding. I don't understand your ways. I see righteous and I see them suffering. I see wicked, I see them successful. When I have this discrepancy, I feel like I'm not as close as I could be. Explain it to me, and then I will be able to be closer to you." And God says, "No. So long as you're alive, that's part of the challenge of this world. I'm not telling you the answer to that question. If life were so simple that we could watch the world and everything made sense, then it would be no challenge to be a God-fearing person. The challenge of being a God-fearing person is to see the difficult things occur and be able to say, okay, I know there's a reason. I don't know what the reason is, but I know God is running the world." There was once a thief that had stolen one too many times. And the king let it be known that whoever captures this thief is going to get a tremendous reward. They finally capture the thief, and everyone's happy. He's been making a lot of trouble. And comes time to execute him. And the king calls out, everyone's gathered for this day, and the king calls out and says, "Can anyone say anything good about this person? Can anyone say something, any reason why we should have any pity on this person?" And a little child walks up and says, "I do." So the king says, "Okay, what do you have to say?" And the child says, "I know he's a thief. I know he did things that are wrong. But I also know he's my father. He might deserve to be hung, but do I deserve to be an orphan?" In our world, so we say, well, if that's justice, then sometimes innocent bystanders get hurt, and there's nothing we can do about it. But God doesn't have such a limitation. God is described as Hatzul, the rock, Tamim Paolo, that everything that he does is exact. That means that no one suffers any amount of pain that they don't deserve. So if we all heard about what happened in Merkaz Rav that night and it hurt us, that was part of the calculation when God allowed that to occur. Every ounce of pain is measured. And anyone who gets any ounce of pain, that's also measured. So we don't understand the measurements, but we have to understand that it is measured. I'd like us to conclude with the words of the prophet Micha. Micha was from the end of prophets, one of the Trei Asar, the 12 smaller prophets, the prophets that their works are take up a smaller amount of volume. And Micha describes how the Jewish people are going to be exiled, himself included, for their sins. He spends the first 7 chapters describing how we're going to be punished for everything we've done. And he ends off the 7th chapter, in the middle of the chapter, the 8th verse, he suddenly switches. And he turns to the enemy and he says, "Al tismechi oyav tili. My enemy, do not be happy for what's happening to me. Ki nafalti, for I have fallen. Kamti, I've gotten back up." He's talking in the past tense. He's saying, this isn't the first time I've fallen. This isn't the first time this is happening to me. I've fallen before and I've gotten up. Don't count me out. I've fallen. It's not easy. The temple's going to be destroyed. Thousands of people are going to be killed. The Jewish people are going to be exiled for 70 years, but we're going to get back up. We have to remember that everything is measured, and if we fall in, we have to get the strength and get back up. Bezat Hashem, we should all have koach. Are there any questions? Okay.
Is there the right for any person to make a suggestion of why it would specifically be there? Or why these people, because I heard such thing, but why specifically there? These people, the fact that God specifically hits in one place, it gives us certain clues about the issues of the. Does a person have any right or moral?
I think that there is definitely room to say why God hid a certain place when we are a prophet. When God grants us prophecy, then we could say why God hid a certain place. God does that sometimes, but it's been a few thousand years since it occurred. So for now, we'll have to wait till a prophet reveals to us. But so long as we don't have prophecy, I think it's presumptuous of a person to think he can say why God hid somewhere. We can say that we have to learn from it. The Pasuk says, when Aaron's children died, V'chol Yisrael yifkut esrefa. The whole Jewish people will cry over the burning. Everyone has to cry. Everyone has to take a lesson from it and say, okay, I'm going to improve in this or in that. I have to learn from it. Chazal tell us that when a tzaddik passes away, it's an atonement for the whole people. Why is it an atonement? Because it's something difficult to swallow when a tzaddik passes away. Part of what we're supposed to walk away with is, hey, wait a second, why am I still here? This is what happens to him. What justification do I have? So the Pasuk also warns us. Part of the problems towards the destruction, the Navi says, is Hatzadik Avad. The Tzadik, he's gone. V'en ish sama lev, and no one takes to heart. Madua Avad Hatzadik. Why is it that the Tzadik's gone? So there is an aspect where every person on an individual level can work on himself and say, hey, wait a second. Am I living up to what I'm supposed to living up to? Let me think for a second. I have a certain responsibility. We have to know that there are different types of din. When we're punished, so there are a few understandings as to the punishment. We know that when we come to Rosh Hashanah, so every one of us gets judged. There are books up there that we every night when we go to sleep, our neshama goes up and signs. Yes, I did this, I did that, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And when comes Rosh Hashanah, so we're taken to task for what we did and didn't do, and we're weighed. But there are levels in deen. A person, an individual is judged. A family is judged, a community is judged, a village, a city, a country, the world. There are different levels in judgment. So I think that when we look at an occurrence like this, it's reasonable to think that this was a judgment of the nation. The nation was judged, and for some reason God chose to take away from the nation such fine people. I don't think we can look at it as individuals or even as a community. Of course, the community has to take heed also, but I think we have to take it on all levels. If I can add one more thing, there's an Arachaim HaKadosh. The Arachaim says, we read this past week, Parsha Shkolim, Ki tisat rosh b'nei Yisrael, take the count of the heads of the Jewish people, lifkudeihem, to their specific countings. So the Arachaim says, this is a reference, what we read this Shabbos, the Arachaim says, this is a reference to the young. Sometimes we see in our history that God takes the young. There are young people who are pious, and suddenly they perish. And when they perish, we have to know, Kitisa, when God lifts from our midst, that Rosh Bnei said, these heads of the Jewish people, they're still young heads. Lifkudehem. We have to know there's an exact counting. God said, there's a decree that's pending for all of the Jewish people, and God said, whatever was supposed to happen to all will be taken out on a few, and then all will be spared. However that works.
Why in the specific case you say that it should see it such a rational process? Why specifically here?
I think that we shouldn't absolve the community from doing their cheshbon and the city from doing its cheshbon, but we have to recognize that the attack wasn't on an individual. The attack was on a people. The attack was because they were Jewish, because they were learning Torah. So, in that vein, I think it's an attack on the nation.
But I think I see a parallel that how old was Rabbi Shapiro when he died?
I don't know. I think 94, something like that.
So it's one of the Gadolim dies of the gym. And then something like that happens. Maybe he was protection for the.
Maybe, but we say that great people protect us more in their death than in their life.
What?
So I'm not sure that works.
What?
We say Gdolim tzaddikim b'mitatam yotar mibechayehim. The tzaddikim are greater post mortem than while they're alive. Micha.
There's one thing you said that, like, the whole everything you said seems to say one thing. There's one line you said it seems to say the opposite. Just want to make sure if I. Yeah, at one point, you see the whole thing. Basically, the whole talk you're saying, you know, we don't understand. You know, God has His reasons for doing this and that. We can try to understand some of it, but we know ultimately. Then you said that, like, nothing happens without a person. If I deserve, you don't mean that, you know, he did some sins there. I said, no, you just, but rather that he deserves it because of some, God has some overarching purpose in bringing things. That maybe he didn't, you know, it's not that like he ate a pork chop and something like you're going to die.
Right.
God has some overarching purpose that he needed to die for some purpose that we can't understand. It's not because he individually.
When I said that, I meant as far as us. The pain that we suffer when we hear it, we should know that everything is weighed. Now, whether they or the people, so I think it's fair to say the people and not they. But who knows God's judgments?
Yeah.
I didn't mean it that we can say they deserved or didn't deserve, even though there is such an approach. It is one of the answers that Eov's friends told him, and it is one of the answers that our sages give. If the Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu deserved to die, certainly everyone else deserves to die. That's what the Meiri writes. But we had a series of classes on this. Now, that doesn't mean that a person deserves to die at such a young age, etc. That's why it's easier to swallow the other understandings. But there is such an answer as well. Yeah?
In the subject of the Nefesh, we're supposed to take some message. You emphasize that on a personal level. The question is, on the collective, such a national level, shouldn't there perhaps be a reference also more national issues?
For sure. You have to have someone. That's a theoretical question. Of course, that should be the case. In any normal country, that would be the case. But we're not a normal country. What can you do? Yeah?
This is the first time that, because to me, it's my first attack. I'm here. And there are other attacks. I was in Holland in the past. And this, to me, it seems to be very specific to Torah. What does it say? Can you tell me more about it? Because a bus, okay, you can take a bus, but that's.
I'll share with you.
More economics, or what is it?
I'll share with you a devastating story. I don't remember how many years ago this was. I think it was about 10 years ago. There was an old Arab in jail, and he had helped. Different attacks on the Jewish people, and he was sitting in jail, and he saw the guard eating non-kosher food. So he turned to the guard and he said, "You're Jewish. How are you eating non-kosher food?" And the guard said, "We don't do that anymore." At which point the Arab said, "You don't do that anymore? I was sitting here." And this is recorded. He said, "I had decided that, you know what? They have a right to the land. I'm done with fighting them. But if you can take your Torah and say, I don't do that anymore, then you have no right to the land. Then I'm going to encourage every one of my children to join the Intifada, and we're not giving up. Because if that's the attitude, then you have no right to the land."
And Arab said that.
There has always been a recognition among our enemies that our strength lies in the Torah. The generals in the army don't like to admit it, but they know it, that the soldiers that are most determined are those that come with a knowledge of Torah and believe in what they're doing from a Torah perspective, and the Arabs know it as well. For years we were scared of this. Asher Yagoti, what we were scared of, occurred. Years, the yeshiva erected gates, and the yeshiva had guards, and the yeshiva had undercover guards. The yeshiva did many things to protect itself. The yeshiva tried. And then it happened on some level. They know what they're doing. There's a reason why they attacked here. There's a reason why they attacked the yeshiva in Atzmona. There's a reason why they were shooting Katyushot at Gush Katif.
The Goy knows our secret.
They always did. Haman and Achashverosh were discussing halachos. Okay, so I think we're going to move on to our... If there aren't any other questions? Okay, so we're holding the...